Well, as a grandpa, you find out you do things you never thought you would do. I have a three-year-old grandson. His name is Daniel. Last year when the Monster Trucks, Monster Jam, was in town, as I understand it, his neighbors went, and that kind of got him into Monster Trucks. So Spider-Man's his big thing, but Monster Trucks are up there. And believe it or not, Monster Jam came to town last week. And sure enough, Grandpa was invited. And how does Grandpa say no? So there I am with Daniel and his dad, Donovan. And we are at the Monster Jam. And it wasn't as bad as I thought, to be quite honest. It was okay. What's interesting, heading into Roger's place, they had all these kind of temporary little shops in different corners, okay? The Monster Jam Corporation was selling their all their stuff, and I was shocked at how many people were in those lines. This is like, really? That many people want that much stuff? But then I noticed what people were buying, at least what I saw, they're buying ear protection, and kind of special ear protection from Monster Jam. I thought it'd be better to just go with the free stuff that Rogers Center was handing out. That's what I did. But sure enough, they are saying quite loudly that there is a challenge to your hearing here. And you have got to be aware of that. You're vulnerable to it. Be proactive. Do something about it. Now, here's what's interesting. That hearing protection, it didn't matter if the particular trucks and the noise they were making were having a rough time or a good time, and some of the trucks were having a rough day. When they got out there and tried their tricks, it was kind of a low point. Other trucks, they were the highlights. I saw stuff, I'm going, whoa, that is pretty amazing. But fact of the matter is, it didn't matter if it was a low point or a highlight, there was still a challenge that made you vulnerable that you had to be aware of. Now, I say that, and I think about how that speaks to life. We live our life, and sometimes we go into valleys, sometimes we're on mountaintops, sometimes we're in between, and I think it's easy for us to think, well, we really only kind of need to guard our hearts in the tough times. But you know what? The trucks made just as much noise in the good times, in the highlights. And there are challenges to our walk with God, to our hearts in the good times as well as the low times. And today we come to a chapter in David's life where we see in 1 Samuel chapter 30, him go from the lowest of the low to the highest of the high. In between there, his men, at least the ones that are written of here, aren't doing so well with the challenges. But David models something that I think is instructive to us. Today, the chapter that we're going into could be entitled David and Ziklag, all right? And you're going, what's a Ziklag? I think a lot of times we think of David and, what would you put? David and Goliath. David and what city? Jerusalem, right? David and Abigail. There are all these things. David and Ziklag? But Ziklag actually occupies this period of time in his life when he was in Ziklag, occupies four chapters of 1 Samuel. Wow. He's there for 16 months. Let's just kind of read about it. We'll pick it up in 1 Samuel 27 to get the context. David been anointed king, but not appointed king. King Saul has been after his life. Twice David has had opportunity to kill Saul and won't, but he still lives under the threat of Saul. So David has an idea, and I think when you look at the overall story, the idea is not one from God, to go to enemy territory. The Philistines were the arch enemies of Israel at this time. So David goes to Philistine country and to their king. His name is Achish. And he says to the king, can you give me refuge here? Okay, I mean, he's running off to an area of totally different values. He's escaping. And that's what he does. So we pick it up, verse 5. Then David said to Achish, "If I have found favor in your eyes, let a place be assigned to me in one of the country towns that I may live there. Why should your servant live in the royal city with you?" You know, Achish seems to have given favor to David. The sense is, well, as Philistines, Saul is our enemy. Saul has made David his enemy. Maybe that makes us allies. It seems that's where the king of Philistia is coming from. So he says in verse 6, "So on that day, Achish gave him Ziklag," this town, "gave him Ziklag." David, it's your town. "And it has belonged to the kings of Judah ever since. David lived in Philistine territory 1 year and 4 months. Wow. Okay? So David's in Ziklag, 16 months. It's an odd story of how he uses it a base to raid other towns and different things like that. But where we're going to pick up the story, there's a point at in the end of chapter 29, David and his men have been gone, and we'll get the story later. They come back, and they realize their Ziklag is plundered. It is totally plundered. Very dark time. Then, within the chapter, they go after the plunder and not only get it back, but a whole lot more, and all of their wives and children, too, are alive, and it's an incredible celebration. So you go from the lowest of the low to the highest of the high. In the lowest of the low, David's men are bitter and angry and want to go after David. In the highest of the high, they're entitled. And so you got all this going on, but David keeps his feet rooted, whether bad time or good time, in the reality of God. And if we were to take a kind of a big takeaway from this message in 1 Samuel 30, it would be this. A truly godly perspective will keep us grounded through the challenges that come in both the low and the high points of life. It keeps us grounded when life ebbs and flows is a godly perspective. And today we're going to allow two different statements right out of scriptures to guide that perspective. The first is in the low time, and in the midst of the low, we'll read David found strength in the Lord his God. That'll be the first thing we talk about. And then in the good times, what we find David saying when everyone gets entitled, he said, "No, the Lord has protected us. He's delivered all this." We're going to share. Okay? So just kind of giving you the outline. We're going to talk about David in the good times and his perspective, and David in the low points and his perspective. And that's where we'll start. So let's start. In the bad times, David in the bad times, his perspective is David found strength in the Lord his God. We're going to talk about what that means, but first, what on earth got them to that point? And to get there, we have to go to 1 Samuel 29. In 1 Samuel 29, war is brewing, okay? The Philistine army is feeling strong, and they're going to go against Israel. And the king of Philistines, he's feeling pretty good about David. So he says, "David, I want you and your 600 men to come with me." See how David, by escaping into Philistia, has put himself in a precarious situation. We don't know what he'd ultimately done, but he does go, and he reports up, leave Ziklag, his 600 men leave Ziklag, report for duty, and gratefully, God intervenes. We don't read that's God intervention, but you can just kind of see his hand in the background. The generals of the Philistines say, "I don't trust David. Don't trust him, okay? We don't want him to fight with us." So the king has to send him home. That brings us now to 1 Samuel 30. Because as David and his men get closer home to Ziklag, they're starting to see smoke. And you can just feel their hearts tighten. And we pick up the story, 1 Samuel 30, verse 1. David and his men reached Ziklag on the third day. Now the Amalekites had raided the Negev in Ziklag, and they had taken captive the women and everyone else in it, both young and old. They killed none of them, but carried them off as they went on their way. When David and his men reached Ziklag, they found it destroyed by fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters taken captive. That is a low point. I mean, it's one thing to see your home burned and your stuff gone, but their wives and their children are gone. And at this point, I don't know that they would have thought they were even alive. This is a low point. So David and his men wept aloud. Yes, obviously, until they had no strength left to weep. David's two wives have been captured, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. So even David personally is facing his own low point of things being taken. But as a leader, what happens? David was greatly distressed because the men were talking of stoning him. Each one was bitter in spirit because of his sons and daughters. So David is not only carrying his own grief, his own loss, he's got his men so bitter, pointing their finger at him, blaming him, and he's fearing for his life. That's a low point. And that brings us to how does he maintain perspective? And we get this in verse 6, but David found strength in the Lord his God. What does that mean? I honestly wish God would give us, here's three steps to finding strength in the Lord your God. He doesn't. In fact, you kind of have to draw from everything what David might have done, and we're going to look at that. And it isn't even saying David felt really good. It was just somehow there's a leaning into God in the midst of this. And I want to look at a few facets from the overall story that might point us into what it means to find strength in the Lord our God. And I got to admit, sometimes this can be elusive when we're in a valley. Sometimes we're looking for a quick fix, and it might not be there. But still, what does it mean to find strength even in the difficult times for that next step? Here are three facets. First is this. I think what we see, David, first of all, he didn't rashly take matters into his own hands. Okay? He didn't just forget God, go independent, and say, okay, how am I going to fix this? And what's interesting, Hebrew stories, one of the ways they communicate truth is through comparison. And there's so many comparisons here. There's a comparison of David to David before. There's a comparison of David to his men. And there's a comparison of David to Saul. So let's just quickly look at those three. David before, Saul's after me. What am I going to do? This is tough. He escapes. Then leaning into God, he takes the escape route. How many times tough times come and we might escape into harmful kind of things that end up being addictive, either empty or addictive. That is one way we go. His men, they turned bitter and they were looking for someone to blame. And how easy to blame God or other people, and we get bitter and we get vengeful and that just overrides everything. Or the big comparison here is probably to Saul, because in the middle of chapters 27 to 28, and it's why is it here? There's this weird story about Saul. Okay, the Philistine army is getting ready to attack Israel. Saul is the king of Israel, and he's scared. So pick it up here at verse 5. When Saul saw the Philistine army, he was afraid. Terror filled his heart. Now, I am far from a Greek Hebrew scholar. I'm very far from. And I was reading one commentary that said that language, terror filled his heart, and down in 30, distress. David was distressed. There's a connection there. It's not one I could find, but again, I lean into those who know more about this than I do, that's for sure. It's a connection. So what does Saul do when he's distressed, when terror fills his heart? Verse 6, he inquired of the Lord, which sounds good, but it was pretty surfacey. All right? The Lord did not answer him by dreams or Urim or prophets. So when he didn't get his answer, the answer he wanted quickly, Saul then said to his attendants, find me a woman who is a medium so I may go and inquire of her. There is one in Endor, they said. He went to the occult. He went totally 180 degrees from seeking the wisdom of God to seeking wisdom that totally left the true God out of the picture and was actually anti-God. You know, again, I think a lot of times we get into difficult situations, I believe all truth is God's truth, but sometimes we forget God and we just start looking for answers without reference to God and where he might be in the midst of those. See, that's the comparison. David leaned into God instead of escape, instead of blame, instead of forgetting God and God's way through. All right? I came across a story, and kind of goes like this. There's some guys who were from a remote area and hadn't really been around a lot of big cities, and we're brought to a big city, and the host wanted to show them around, and the guests were, it's very different, very new. Guests didn't have time, all the time, to be with them. The host said, well, we just want to go exploring. Guest is thinking, well, that's kind of dangerous. I made sure they had a cell phone. Call if you get lost. It wasn't too long and they're lost. They call. And the guest says, okay, here's what you do. Stay on the phone. Go to the next corner. Look up at the signs going two different ways and tell me what you see. Well, it's quiet for about 30 seconds. And they say, I'm not sure what you're looking for, but I think we're at the corner of walk and don't walk. A crossroads. And when we come into times of difficulty, we stand at a crossroads. And it's not walk and don't walk as much as walk by leaning into God or walk independent of God. All right? David at that crossroads said, I will lean into God. I don't want to choose escape. I don't just want to look for blame, bitterness. And neither do I want to forget God in the midst of the options. He leaned into God. All right. So he found strength in the Lord. First, he didn't rashly take matters into his own hands. Secondly, I think what we see when we look at the Old Testament's witness and we include the Psalms, we see that David authentically worshiped and prayed to God. That's just what we did, what we see he does. David found strength in the Lord his God. We've got all these psalms that he wrote, and all we can imagine is that it would make sense, not that he wrote a psalm, but he went into something that he had been very used to doing. Psalms are full of his authentic prayer, and it can be raw. But then in the end, he comes down to who God is. We get a great example in Psalm 13. And maybe this he had written earlier. Who knows? Maybe he wrote it later. In reflection on this, we don't know that, or maybe it was totally unrelated, but it's a kind of psalm that we see where David says, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Do you see the raw there? Do you see David gives permission in the midst of the low times for us to just come to God and say, blah. He does. In fact, it's that honesty where he can start to meet us. And it doesn't end there, though. We go to the end of the psalm, and David makes a choice. And now, it's not saying he felt it. We don't know if he felt it. But he brought into the midst of all the ugliness in his life the reality of God, but I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me. He's recalling who God is. He's recalling how God has worked in his past. And he's bringing that perspective. And it's almost like he's telling himself to do this. And I know I've been in low spots, and I get it, and I understand it, and it's not easy, but even when it just doesn't feel, we don't have the feelings, we come back to the truth about God. So in the midst of a low point, God says, lean in, where we often want to isolate from God. Maybe he doesn't want to hear it. No, be honest. Lay out your heart. But then as you lay out your heart, be reminded of who God is. It might mean playing worship music. going for a walk, wherever that looks like for you to connect with God. But it doesn't end here, because these two are kind of isolated still. It's just God, David alone. But I think the next one's important, because the third thing he did is we see him seeking godly counsel in community. He doesn't do this alone, all right? I came across a story I think is very telling for our day and age, where social connection over digital means is just everywhere. Everyone can be connected. You know, Facebook is kind of passe, but this story goes back to Facebook. He's got 700 friends, and he's really proud of it. But he also knows he's living a fairly isolated life when it comes to real people. So he made a decision that, hey, I want to make some of my digital friends actual friends. So he sent 700 invitations, all his friends. He picked a restaurant. He said, hey, I want you to all come. Let's get together face to face. Well, he did that, and when he did, he gave people an option. You can write back attending, maybe attending, not attending. 15 said they'd be there. 60 said they might be there. Okay, so already only 75 out of 700. He's hoping 20 would come. Well, the night of the event, it says, brimming with optimism, I headed over to the neighborhood watering hole and I waited. And I waited. And waited. Eventually, one person showed up. And that one person, he didn't even know her. She was a friend of a friend. So they made a little awkward conversation and she left. And he ends his article on this by saying, 700 friends. And I was alone. I think David could have gone there. 600 men, and I'm alone. But he wasn't alone. There were those faithful to him. One was his priest. Others were in the company that would go to the priest on his behalf. We come back to 1 Samuel chapter 30, verse 7. And it says there, David said to Abiathar, the priest, the son of Ahimelech, bring me the ephod. That back then, that's what the priests used. It was part of their garment to determine where God was leading. They didn't have the Bible as we have it. So this was kind of their means of hearing from God. And when he goes to Abiathar doesn't say, hey, you got us into this mess. You're on your own. No, Abiathar was community to him. Brought the ephod, and then together they looked to God. Abiathar brought it to him, and David inquired of the Lord, shall I pursue this raiding party? Will I overtake them? Pursue them, he answered. You will certainly overtake them and succeed in the rescue. In a low point, it is so human nature to isolate, and in fact, social media makes us isolate more because no one puts their problems on the internet. So I'm the only one that has them, and we isolate, and we don't see anyone for us. Where I believe it is the overarching and overwhelming message of Scripture that when you're in a low point, reach out to other believers. We're not all going to get it right. You know, I keep coming back to the analogy. We're like porcupines on a cold night. We huddle, and sometimes we kind of poke each other, but, you know, over time, we don't get it right. We muddle through, but we learn to be community to one another. If you're in a tough time, don't isolate. Who might you reach out to? And not only is it reaching out, but it's reaching out with God in mind, that God's given us his word. How together do we say, okay, where might God be leading? How is his word spoken to you? How is it real to you? So that's David strengthening himself in the Lord. And I wish I could tie a bow on it and say, do these three steps and everything's going to feel great. That's not the picture here. Here's three facets. And it may mean you have strength for the next step. But God will strengthen you. The facets here are just lean in, not lean out. Don't just rashly do what you think you should. Okay? Say, God, lead me, even if it's one step at a time and it isn't as fast as I want. Lean into God. The second one is be honest with God in prayer and worship. Remember who he is. And then thirdly, don't isolate, but enter into community. So that's the low spot. And it's kind of a good thing this chapter 30 doesn't end there because it's pretty rough. I came across a story of a train, passenger train, making its way from the West Coast over a mountain pass, and two-engine train halfway on a mountain pass, one engine goes, engineer comes on, and they make an announcement, hey, one of our engines is lost, don't worry, it's going to be slower, we're going to get there, you know how these stories go, not much further down the tracks, the other engine quits, and now what does the engineer have to say? He said, ladies and gentlemen, I have some good news and bad news. Bad news is both engines have failed. We'll be stuck here for some time until the additional engine arrives. But the good news is you didn't take this trip on a plane. There you go. There's a bigger thing going on. And chapter 30 ends on the good news. But just because of good news doesn't mean there still isn't a challenge. It's a challenge of entitlement, possessiveness, hoarding, taking control. And David counters it with this overarching message. The Lord has protected us and delivered this into our hands. All will share alike. Okay? So let's back up. How did we get to this? At this point, Ziklag is burnt, plundered, wives and children are gone. Inquire of the Lord, he says, go after the Amalekites. Go after the raiding party. So they're following God. Go after the raiding party. They got two issues. One, they're exhausted. Absolutely exhausted. These are 600 men who've made the trek up to be with the army of the Philistines, have made the trek back, so they're physically exhausted. They've been weeping and mourning over the loss of wives and children. They are emotionally and physically spent. So much so that when they set out to find the Amalekites, a third of them, 200, are just, they're barely moving. And David, as a wise leader, says, well, if you can't, you can't. And they stopped at a valley, and 200 of them stayed at this valley of Besor. So now there's 400 going, but the next problem they have is direction. This is a big wilderness. There's no satellite imagery to say there'd be the Amalekites. It's just not there. Where do you start? God moves. They're not sure where to go, and they come across this guy who's half dead. They treat him. They find out he's an Egyptian slave. He had been part of plunder of that same group that plundered Ziklag. And because he was sick, they left him to die. But he knows where they were going, and he had a really good idea where they were going to be. So all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they get direction where to find the raiding group. Let's pick up the story at verse 16. This Egyptian slave led David down, and there they were, scattered over the countryside, eating, drinking, reveling because of the great amount of plunder they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from Judah. Okay, note there, this is way more plunder than Ziklag. Okay, they have got a bunch of stuff. David fought them from dusk until the evening of the next day, and none of them got away except 400 young men who rode off on camels and fled. David recovered everything the Amalekites had taken, including his two wives. Verse 19 is huge. Nothing was missing, young or old, boy or girl, plunder or anything else they had taken. David brought everything back. This is a land where warfare was often just absolutely mean, violent. It wasn't uncommon. You went into a city, you would wipe out the women and the children. God protected each and every one of them. It's a miracle. Really is a miracle. Then we come to verse 20. He took all the flocks and herds, and his men drove them ahead of the other livestock, saying, this is David's plunder. All the flocks and herds, not just what was taken from Ziklag, but everything. They ended up with way more than they lost. So all of a sudden, they've got their wives and their children back, and that's amazing. But they also have suddenly more stuff than they can imagine. They are sitting on plenty. Now, you would think there's challenge in this. Yeah, there is. A challenge of entitlement. Challenge of forgetting who's behind it all. We read about it in verse 21. So you have 400 men. They're coming back with all the wives, the children, the plunder, all of it. They came to the 200 men who'd been too exhausted to follow him and were left behind in the Besor Valley. They came out to meet David and his men with them. And as David and his men approached, he asked them how they were. See, David sees them for who they are. The others just see them as, you weren't part of this. But all the evil men and troublemakers among David's followers said, because they didn't go out with us, we'll not share with them the plunder we recovered. However, each man may take his wife and children and go. Do you see here the forgetfulness? Why weren't they exhausted? Maybe God gave them strength. The fact that everyone was alive is a miracle in itself. It's all grace. It's all God. But they thought it was theirs. Because I was the one who in the end got it. Again, another story you may have heard. Ladies in an airport waiting to get on a plane. Got a layover. Buys a package of cookies. Anyway, she's sitting down reading, and all of a sudden she hears a rustling, and the guy next to her eating a cookie out of this package. And he set it down in the empty chair between them, and she's thinking, that's rude. She didn't want to say anything, but just to, you know, make sure he knows, she takes one. He takes another. And this kind of goes on, and she's fuming, and she's getting angry, and there's only one left, and the guy kind of looks at her and breaks it in two and pushes half to her, and boy, she's mad. Well, until they call for time to get on the plane, and she opens up her bag to get her ID, and guess what? There's the bag of cookies she bought. All along, she's all stewing over her possessions that weren't hers. See, when we look at David's perspective, he was able to keep the truth that it's all from God, and we share. He recognized, first of all, that God was the source of all they'd obtained. It's all him. Yeah, we think of our lives. You know, it's so easy in North America. You know, we have so much. And yeah, a lot of us worked really hard for it. No doubt. But here's what we forget. There are people in this world, many, many, many people in this world who work themselves like crazy to hopefully get enough in that day to have a meal. Why should we be so blessed? We think, well, my education or my trades training or my skill development, but again, we live in a land where we can get that. And a lot of people never have that opportunity. When we actually have stuff, then we can go to store and buy things. Stuff on the shelves, not everyone has that. It's all from God. It's all from God. And David reminds us of that in verse 22. David said, no, my brothers, you must not do that with what the Lord has given us. He has protected us and delivered us into your hands with the raiding party that came against us. So that's first, remembering it's all from God. But then secondly, how do you break the entitlement, the protectiveness, the hoarding? And what we see in David is a grateful generosity. Verse 24, who will listen to what you say? The share of the man who stayed with the supplies is to be the same as of him who went down to the battle. All will share alike. Wow. And not only do you share with the 200, so all the 600 get their share because it's all from God, But there's so much here. Verse 26, when David reached Ziklag, he sent some of the plunder to the elders of Judah, who were his friends. There are people who weren't even part of this at all. But God has given us so much. How can we not be open to share as he leads us? I wonder, this is not just an isolated principle in this story. It's all over Scripture. David may have remembered back to the stories he heard about when Israel became a nation. God called Abram. Said, Abraham, go, you're going to be the father of a nation. And in Genesis 12:3, I will bless those who bless you. Whoever curses you, I'll curse. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you. God's got this principle for his people. When I bless you, it's not to hoard, but to be open to bless others with. New Testament, it's all over the New Testament. When Paul is talking to the church about being a generous people, on what basis? He says, here, you will be enriched. God will bless you in every way so you can be generous on every occasion. The fundamental question when we find ourselves in a spacious place is, are we taking credit for what is God's and ownership of what is God's? And one way to know that is, are we open to share as he leads? The challenge of the good time is entitlement. This sense that it's of me when it's really of God. So we've looked at, in the bad times, the tough times, David says, find strength in the Lord your God. It's not three easy steps, but it's about leaning into him when it's so easy to lean out and isolate yourself from God. It's about being honest with God in prayer and worship and digging deep into his character. And it's about not being isolated from other people, but reaching out to community, their support and their counsel. But then in the good times, what's the challenge? Entitlement, pride? David says, it's all from God. Be open and share as he leads. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for the honesty of your word, how it speaks to the reality of every situation. And Lord, we see it here in the low times. We see it here in the good times. And God, it comes back to who you are, the goodness of God, the goodness of God that we tend to have difficulty seeing when it's tough and forget when it's good. So God, even as we close, we come back and declare your goodness or wherever we find ourselves now. Let's stand together.